All right, Creedence Clearwater Revival with Looking Out My Back Door. One of my favorite lyrics from that is the Dinosaur Victrola listening to Buck Owens. And for just a little reminder on who Buck Owens is, we're going to hear from him right now.
Oh, the sun is going to die in my head.
Strata.
You sure are a strange cucumber.
And you're listening to DJ Strata on the Strange Cucumber Show at WDCE 90.1 FM, University of Richmond Radio, and streaming online, WDCE.org. The number of the station is 289-UR90-8790. And stay with me for a variety of scenic entertainment, musical collage, and perhaps sometimes even an unidentifiable.
The following program contains music or materials that some listeners may find offensive. WDC apologizes and urges audience discretion.
When I become death, death is the seed from which I grow. Shall he not much more clothe you, O little faith? Therefore, take no thought, saying, what shall we eat? What shall we drink? Wherewithal shall we be clothed? But seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Take therefore no thought for the morrow, for the morrow shall take thought for the things of itself. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof.
What were the reactions of the people that you liberated?
Go
kind of a mix. The military zones, that was pretty low-key. A lot of formal ceremonies, raising and lowering of flags, I relieve you, sir, I stand relief, shit like that. There was also a little bit of bravado. You know, we didn't really need any rescuing and all. I understand. Every grunt wants to be the one riding over the hill. No one wants to be the one in the fort. Sure you didn't need
during my time here. It came to me when I tried to classify your species. I realized that you're not actually mammals. Every mammal on this planet instinctively develops a natural equilibrium with the surrounding environment, but you humans do not. You move to an area and you multiply and multiply until every natural resource is consumed. And the only way you can survive is to spread to another area. There's another organism on this planet that follows the same pattern. Here it is. A virus. Human beings are a disease. A cancer of this planet. You are a plague. And we are the cure.
But you see, in dealing with me,
well, I just didn't know
that they were dealing with a staunch character. And I tell you, if there's anything worse than a staunch woman, S-T-A-U-N-C-H. There's nothing worse, I'm telling you. They're weakened.
You're the second person. Earlier today I was in the third person. First person, you're the second person. Earlier today I was in the third person. I'm the first person, you're the second person. Earlier today I was in the third person. Stop cursing, start diversing. Edifices, bliss, the sunshine, pick your mind, expand your thoughts. Spend it out, don't doubt, my mind, my brain is caught. I'm just blessed. Trip hopping, so I feel like a stream. It's just a dream.
so deaf. The mouth of brain is caught, I'm just blessed. Trip out, so I flow like a stream. It's just a dream.
Ready?
Advisors compare the current downturn to the Great Depression.
We've made all these comparisons to Herbert Hoover. I mean, is it possible it can get that bad?
No.
I mean,
we're talking about
Hoover. We're going to reach the point like they did in the Great Depression where it's more expensive belief to make something you could, than you could sell it for.
The only thing we have to fear is
zero.
And guess
what?
Now, three-month
treasury bills are 0.02% interest.
This is about going to your automatic teller machine and having money still come out.
The only thing we have to fear is Fear itself.
On his album Songs for Swinging Lovers, Frank Sinatra is awesomely in control of his emotional expression, rhythm, and pitch.
An eye is meant to see. The soul is here for its own joy. A head for loving a true love. The eye goes blind when it only wants to see. Why? The eye goes blind when it only wants to see. Why?
Aja,
but.
Aja,
but.
A nice man to see.
The soul is here for its own joy. Ahead, for loving a true love. Love is for vanishing into the sky. The mind for learning what men have done and tried to do. Mysteries are not to be solved. The eye goes blind when it only wants to see why. The eye goes blind when it only wants to see why.
Hey, ain't life
Before we start on the meditation, I would like first to explain you what meditation is, and then we will do a little exercise on concentration, because most people in the Western world are not taught how to concentrate their thoughts, and it may be rather difficult for them to start to meditate at once.
reality is relative to the mind that occurs. But since the mind that occurs is of the same species, the genus Homo, then I'm talking to you.
Listening to WDCE 90.1 FM, University of Richmond Radio, and WDCE.org streaming online. This is DJ Strider, and you're involved in the Strange Cucumber Show.
Thank you.
and some are... Some statistics are surprising, some are unbelievable, and some are simply unacceptable. Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. Nearly 30%, and that's the average. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone, not just parents, but friends and neighbors and family members, to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, push them a little, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through. Because this is one statistic we simply can't afford to ignore.
You can do your part by going to boostup.org and sending an email, a text message, or even a wake-up call to a student at risk of dropping out. Go to boostup.org and provide the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
I don't know, but I don't like to look at that tunnel up there.
Hey, Wonka, I want off!
Round the world and home again. That's the sailor's way.
I don't mind you try, buddy.
Wonka, ask me a favor. Tell those creatures to stop bubbling from the...
We're going too fast. We're
going to
sink. I know.
Mine is
going to
drop the boat. Hang on, darling. Close your eyes and hang on tight.
This isn't funny, Wonka!
You can't possibly see where you're going, Wonka!
You're right. I can't.
Boy, what a great series this would make.
Wonka!
This is kind of strange.
Yeah, strange, Charlie, but it's fun.
This is terrific.
I'm going to get off the boat, Wonka!
I think I'm going to be sick.
I can take a joke, but this has gone too far. Tell our little guy to turn us around, Wonka!
Now I am going to be sick.
There's no earthly way of knowing
he's singing.
Which direction we are going. There's no knowing where we're rowing, or which way the river's flowing. Is it raining? Is it snowing? Is a hurricane a-blowing? Not a speck of light is showing, so the danger must be growing. Are the fires of hell a-glowing? Is the grisly reaper mowing? Yes! The danger must be growing, for the rowers keep on rowing, and they're certainly not showing any signs that they are slowing!
As you go far enough, quite right, sir. Stop the boat.
We're there.
Where?
Here. A small step for mankind, but a giant step for us.
All ashore.
Get me off this crate.
Now, why don't they show stuff like that on TV?
I don't know.
What a nightmare.
Daddy, I do not want a boat like this.
Dairy cream?
Whipped cream?
Coffee cream?
Vanilla cream?
Hair cream?
Meine Herrschaften, schenken Sie mir Ihre Aufmerksamkeit.
That's not French.
Sie kommen jetzt in den interessantesten und gleichzeitig geheimsten Raum meiner Fabrik.
I can't take much more of this.
Meine Damen und Herren, der Inventing Room. Now remember, no messing about. No touching, no tasting, no telling.
No telling what?
You see, all of my most secret inventions are cooking and simmering in here. Old Slugworth would give his false teeth to get inside for just 5 minutes. So...
Strata, you sure are a strange cucumber.
Chesterfield was first to name its ingredients. Ingredients that give you the best possible smoke. Now, Chesterfield is first to give you scientific facts in support of smoking. Nose, throat, and accessory organs not adversely affected by smoking Chesterfields.
You're at the age where you don't get thrown by curveballs. This is the age of knowing how to get things done. So, why would you let something like erectile dysfunction get in your way? Isn't it time you talk to your doctor about Viagra? 20 million men already have.
Dip with a little sliced olives, and now for the Ritz. Guys, where are the Ritz?
Now, Chesterfield is first to give you scientific facts in support of smoking.
In just 5 minutes. That's right, 5 minutes. How do I know? I use it myself. Now you can get a full 30-day supply of this breakthrough miracle eye cream absolutely free.
My opinion that the ears, nose, throat, and accessory organs of all participating subjects examined by me were not adversely affected in the 6 months period by smoking the cigarettes provided. Remember this report, and buy Chesterfields either way you like them, regular or king size, premium quality Chesterfields, and much milder. If that's the game you're missing because of a mean cold, here's something you should know.
Every second someone takes it for the miseries of a cold.
Millions more take Bromo Quinine.
Every second someone takes it for the miseries of a cold.
Bromo Quinine.
Jeunesse features Relaxoderm technology to smooth your wrinkles away. Call now and you'll also receive a Jeunesse Collagen Builder with natural peptides to help prevent future wrinkles. You'll get both the Jeunesse Eye Cream and the Collagen Builder absolutely free.
Everybody knows the difference. My husband did, my friends did, and my kids noticed the difference.
Unlike other creams or invasive Botox, Jeunesse is all natural with powerful antioxidants. No mineral oil, no petroleum byproducts, and no pharmaceutical preservatives. I was really skeptical because nothing had ever worked before. But Jeunesse literally took years off my face in 5 minutes. But don't take our word for it. Try Jeunesse free and see the dramatic results for yourself. When you look in the mirror, you'll be amazed at how vibrant and radiant your skin will be. The other products don't compare to Jeunesse. I get results within 5 minutes, and I look 10 years younger. So try the anti-aging miracle that big cosmetic companies are hoping remains a secret. Get your free 30-day supply of Jeunesse 5-Minute Eye Cream and the Collagen Builder today, and you'll only pay shipping and handling. Call right now, and you'll also receive our neck tightening treatment as your free gift. While supplies last. While supplies last. While supplies last.
Inside the great mystery that is, we don't really own anything. What is this competition we feel then? Before we go, one at a time, through the same gate. If you've opened your loving to God's love, you're helping people you don't know and have never seen. Is what I say true? If you've known it. are the beginning of the universe.
You're listening to WDCE 90.1 FM, University of Richmond Radio, and streaming online, WDCE.org. The number at the station is 289-8790, and you're here with DJ Strider and the Strange Cucumber Show.
Now from Mr. D.T. Kitching of Spennymoor, County Durham. Logan Purcell Smith, in one of his books, refers to, quotation, mystical slip-slop and dreadful musings in old world gardens, end quotation. Since the mystical experience seems to be largely incommunicable, what contribution has the mystic made to the fund of human knowledge? Aldous Huxley.
Well, I mean, what contribution has Mr. Logan Purcell Smith made to the fund of human knowledge, it might also be asked. I don't think very much. I mean, and in general, there are many forms of art which don't make any contribution to human knowledge, but they make a great deal contribution to human being. So, I mean, we have to be before we know, and I would say that both the aesthetic and the mystical experience can contribute greatly to the quality of being in those people who have them, and I think may influence conduct in desirable ways, and are therefore important.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I shouldn't quarrel with any of that. Obviously, I mean, it seems quite clear that mystical experiences are genuine in the sense that the people who claim to have them, do have them, and also they are exceedingly valuable often to those who do have them. The only question that arises is whether they are cognitive, and I think I would, had Aldous Huxley maintained that they were cognitive, I might have been inclined to argue with him, but as he hasn't maintained this, I have no quarrel. Could you, for the benefit of viewers, define cognitive?
Well, I think I possibly what the questioner had in mind. Now from Mr. D.T. being in those people who have them. And the question I had in mind was, although it seemed to me that it was a disparaging way of talking about mystical experiences, which I shouldn't myself share, what he might also have had in mind was the claim made by some mystics that they were, it might be said, penetrating to a deeper order of reality, or in some sense discovering more about the world than scientists do, as if mysticism was a kind of super science. Now, this seems to me to be not the case. It seems to me that it isn't the case that the mystic is competing with the scientist in describing what I think is only the one world and doing it better. It seems to me that one has to judge his experiences not from the point of view of truth and falsehood, but from the point of view of aesthetic or moral value.
Do you agree that Eyre is saying what you're saying, Aldous Huxley?
Yes, I mean, actually, the great Western mystics have used a very interesting term. I mean, they say that this gives them obscure knowledge. I mean, the obscure knowledge, in a sense, is an experience of the world as a totality. I mean, I think it may be knowledge in this sense, that it's a kind of experience of the whole and not of the analyzed parts of the whole. And possibly this is a form of knowledge. I mean, the world is clearly a one and a whole, and in the sense that the experience is an experience of unity with the oneness, it may be a form of obscure knowledge, though I certainly would agree that it has nothing to do with scientific knowledge in an analytical form.
Yeah, there is one point I'd like to go back to, this question of the universe being one. Now, it seems to me that quite clearly one could have the feeling, I understand this is perhaps essentially the mystical feeling, seeing things as a unity. But if you abstract it from that and put it forward as a proposition, which the mystic knows or believes to be true, then it seems to me very dubious, because I'm not quite sure how I would interpret it. It seems to me quite clearly not true that every fact is logically connected with every other. This is what Bradley and those people believe, and this seems to me to have been shown by Moore and others to have been false. Now, it might be held every fact was causally connected with every other, but this seems to me very improbable. I just thought that science could only make advances by isolating certain things. If everything was causally relevant, if you couldn't neglect anything, you could never be at all sure of the value of our hypotheses. So I'm not sure if I'm right about these points, I'm not sure what point this statement has, except as a description of a certain kind of emotion, feeling, call it what you will, which the mystic has, and a very valuable one and a very important one. But I thought the moment you tried to objectivize it and state it in logical terms, then it rather crumbled under analysis.
Before all the answers, could I make a point which I'd like him to take up?
Julian Huxley.
I would like to put it this way, that look at it from, as it were, the functional point of view. What is a mystical experience doing? And instead of thinking in terms of something absolute, like whether it is telling you that the universe is absolutely one or not, it is achieving a greater degree of integration of certain types of different experiences than you otherwise would get. And it's the same sort of thing that happened on a rather different level from what happened in the history of science, for instance, when people gave up the idea of absolute qualities of heat and cold and thought in terms of a scale of temperature. It's a greater degree of integration of certain experiences. Would that be...
Yes, and I think what is very important is that the sense of the experiencer being integrated into the universe. I mean, I think we can get this intellectually. I mean, the fact that, well, after all, we suddenly discover our dependence upon the universe if somebody puts a pillow over our faces. I mean, that we depend, things that we take for granted, that we are absolutely dependent on being in the physical universe. And that it seems to me that this is the important part of the experience, the sense of our unity and dependence upon and relationship with the thing as a whole. I mean, whether, as you say, it's causally related or logically related or not, I'm not prepared to say, but I think it's this sense of the integration which is what the mystics call the obscure knowledge.
Thank you.
brighter note...
Commercial break.
The government has now banned the carrying of spears.
Stop about every 1,000 miles, ain't asking too much, is it?
You might wish to stay on and listen.
It was a place where everything was legal.
I met this woman.
So if you're looking for emotional satisfaction, my advice to you is seek professional help.
Thank you for joining us live on the air.
My pleasure.
One Nation, under God, has turned into one nation under the influence of one drug. Television, the drug of a nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. On television, the drug of a nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. TV, its satellite links are United States of unconsciousness. Apathetic, therapeutic, and extremely addictive. The methadone metronome, pumping out 150 channels 24 hours a day. You can flip through all of them, and still there's nothing worth watching. TV is a reason why less than 10% of our nation reads books daily. Why most people think Central America means Kansas. Socialism means un-American, and apartheid is a new headache remedy. Absorbed in its world, it's so hard to find us. It shapes our minds the most. Maybe the mother of our nation should remind us that we're sitting too close to the television, the drug of the nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. On television, the drug of the nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. TV is a stomping ground for political candidates, where bears in the woods are chased by Grecian formulated bald eagles. TV is mechanized politics, remote control over the masses, co-sponsored by environmentally safe gases. Watch for the PBS special. It's a perpetuation of the two-party system, where image takes precedence over wisdom, where soundbite politics are served to the fast food culture, where straight teeth in your mouth are more important than the words that come out of it. Race baiting is the way to get selected. Will he Horton or will he not get elected? On television, the drug of a nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. On television, the drug of a nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation.
On the screen is an address where you can mail your tithe offering or gift of love.
Okay, got the idea? All right, now let's concentrate.
Better living through television. TV, is it the reflector or the director? Does it imitate us or do we imitate it? Because a child watches 1,500 murders before he's 12 years old. And then we wonder why we created a Jason generation that learns to laugh rather than abhor the whore. TV is a place where armchair generals and quarterbacks can experience firsthand the excitement of video warfare as the theme song is sung in the background. Sugar-sweet sitcoms that leave us with a bad actor taste, while pop stars metamorphosize into soda pop stars. You saw the video, you heard the soundtrack. Well, now go buy the soft drink. Well, the only cola that I support would be a union COLA cost of living allowance. On television, the drug of the nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. On television, the drug of the nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. Back again, new and improved, we return to our irregularly programmed schedule, hidden cleverly between heavy-breasted beer and car commercials. CNN, ESPN, ABC, BCB, TNT, but mostly BS, where oxymoronic language like virtually spotless, fresh, frozen, light, yet filling, and military intelligence have become standard. TV is a place where phrases are redefined, like recession to necessary downturn, crude oil on a beach to moose,
Civilian death to collateral damages. And being killed by your own army is now called friendly fire. TV is a place where the pursuit of happiness has become the pursuit of trivia. Where toothpaste and cars have become sex objects. Where imagination is sucked out of children by a cathode ray nipple. TV is the only wet nurse that would create a cripple. Television, the drug of the nation, breeding ignorance, feeding radiation. On television, the drug of the nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. On television, the drug of the nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. On television, the drug of the nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation.
Lights the silver rails winding around dark mountains and over steep gorges of jagged rock and one freezing cold rushing black mountain river. I wish there was enough time to describe all of the funny twists and turns that led up to now, but there isn't enough time because there's a ticking clock and the two passengers we care most about don't know anything about it. To see what happens next, visit read.gov to read The Exquisite Corpse, a riveting adventure pieced together by John Sheska, Shannon Hale, Daniel Handler, and other popular authors. Explore new worlds. Read. Brought to you by the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
What the hell do you think you're doing? Dragging your butt through the day, selling body and soul to a bunch of bland normals? Acting stupid so they'll think you're one of them? Tired of getting all of the guilt, but none of the sex? There is a simple answer, dear friend. A glowing beacon of slack amidst the turmoil and darkness. It's J.R. Bob Dobbs, the living slack master in his Church of the Subgenes. Bob brings a new destiny for the abnormal. For Bob comes to justify our sins, to unmask the conspiracy, and to get us back the slack they stole away. It's us versus them. Are you going to fry in hell on earth alongside the pink boys? Or will you pull the wool over your own eyes and accept Bob into your mind? Repent, quit your job, slack off, and praise Bob!
Church of the Subgenes, eternal salvation, or triple your money back.
Shopping eyes, blood in the sky.
Oh, hello. I'm Paul Rubino. Welcome to the University of Richmond, where passion meets purpose. At the University of Richmond, for a mere $50,000 a year, you can get all we have to offer. State-of-the-art academics, perfect athletics, not to mention the 2008 national champions for football. The University of Richmond, we are an inclusive community, diverse, and in the heart of the South. At the University of Richmond, we provide many services that allow students to take advantage of the great city of Richmond. Here, we are perfect. Here we are at E. Claiborne Robbins Stadium, our newest addition to campus, a $25 million state-of-the-art facility for our gorgeous, phenomenal football program. We're so confident of our team, we don't even need to stay to the fourth quarter. So, if you're interested in joining the University of Richmond community and happen to have the amount of money needed to fit in with our lovely, amazing culture, you have BlackBerry Torch, your newest phone. If you have an Audi, BMW, Mercedes, or Lexus, I encourage you to apply. If you wear boat shoes, come on down. If you have the financial wherewithal to fit in, and your hair looks half as good as mine, I encourage you to apply. We're waiting for you.
We generally think that colonization is something that happens only in other countries. But aren't we in America also being colonized, constantly and relentlessly? Which is easier for corporate political power, controlling people a continental way or those right next door? Americans watch an average of 4 hours of television a day. Our creative action is limited by an accumulation of regulations, taxes, and rules to an extent that eclipses much of our individuality. There's a point where one's material life is in balance. One has neither too much nor too little. The former, with materialism caked on like a million barnacles, can rarely experience the simple joy of being. No lists of things to be done, the day providential to itself, the hour, there is no later, this is later.
At the University of Richmond, you are always safe. There are no issues of any sort of anger, hatred, danger. We are a perfect community. There is no action. We are calm. There are no assaults. No one gets in trouble. At the University of Richmond, we're better than you. And we know it.
Patrol these waters. Sharks patrol these waters. Don't let your fingers dangle in the water. And don't you worry about the Dayglow Orange Life Preserver. It won't save you. It won't save you. Swim for the shore just as fast as you are able. Swim like a motherfucker. Swim. about the scene shifts to now, the ever-glorious now, the ever-present now. Dredged in flour and deep fat fried and cooled on paper towels and then devoured. You know, I spent 15 years in a life raft. 15 years in a life raft. Now I got something to say. Stay in your lifeboats, people. Stay in your lifeboats, people. It's murder out there, murder out there. Sharks patrol these waters. Sharks patrol these waters. Hey, don't you worry about the Diglo Orange Life Preserver. It won't save you. It won't save you. Swim for the shores just as fast as you were able. Swim.
Collapse of a civilization, and then, in its place, the formation of a new way of existence. This, in 1984, is London, chief city of Airstrip 1, a province of the state of Oceania.
Replacement valve for my speak right.
Your speak right ceased to function?
Oh, yes, just now.
You should have notified the fault.
Only a moment's work. I found the right type of valve.
Put it back. You know it would have been brought to your work cubicle on request. This irregularity has been recorded. Return to your cubicle, Smith.
Required as follows. The Times of the 17th of March, 1984, copy sent here with contains reported speech by Big Brother. He is alleged to have predicted that Eurasian forces would launch attack in North Africa. Please rectify in accordance with fact.
Good evening. Your technical fault has been put right?
Yes, I'm able to go on now.
In his broadcast speech last night, Big Brother referred in confident terms to the probability of a full-scale Eurasian offensive early next month. There is now no possible doubt, he said, that it will take place in North Africa. Other fronts are expected to remain quiet.
An extraordinary error. The speech was evidently misreported.
Grossly misreported, since the offensive, in fact, came in India.
South India, 3 days ago.
Exactly. Such a careless report must not exist.
Routine correction to Times of 17th March 1984, where shown, quote, in his broadcast speech last night, Big Brother referred in confident terms to the probability of a large-scale Eurasian offensive early next month. There is no possible doubt, he said. It will be launched in South India. Other parts are expected to remain quiet. Reprint entire back number and fire.
Stand by. Everyone complete what you are now doing and stand by. There are 45 seconds to go before the 2 minutes hit.
Correction required as follows. The Times of 19th December 1983 contains a report of statement by the Ministry of Plenty refers to, quote, categorical pledge, unquote, of no reduction in chocolate ration during 1984. Please rectify.
30 grams a week reduced to 20. Routine correction to Times of 19th December 1983, where shown, quote, a spokesman for the Ministry of Plenty stated last night that it will be necessary to reduce the chocolate ration to 20 grams in April, unquote. Reprint entire back number.
Final warning. Stand by, comrades, for the 2 minutes hit.
Upon the people to follow me, follow me. Follow me! Or die!
Big brother!
Watch over us!
You save us! You help us!
Be our protector!
Big brother!
That was a little sample from the 1950s version of the film adaptation of George Orwell's novel 1984, and it focused on an event called the 2 Minutes Hate, and the description in the novel is so good that in spite of the movie adaptation, I thought it was worth reading a portion, and certainly worth thinking about whether we see anything like this today. So the 2 Minutes Hate was an obligatory break that everyone had to take during work. They could get out of their cubicle, and for 2 minutes they would all gather around a screen and be shown a sort of propaganda video when the face of their enemy came on. They had all kinds of pre-programmed little litanies. Here's the description. And again, this is the way the novel's set up. It's Winston Smith who's keeping a secret diary because, of course, you're not allowed to write. Writing is pretty subversive. And so he's keeping this secret diary, and he's describing the hate. In its second minute, the hate rose to a frenzy. People were leaping up and down in their places and shouting at the top of their voices in an effort to drown the maddening, bleeding voice that came from the screen. The little sandy-haired woman had turned bright pink, and her mouth was opening and shutting like that of a landed fish. Even O'Brien's heavy face was flushed. He was sitting very straight in his chair, his powerful chest swelling and quivering as though he were standing up to an assault of the wave. The dark-haired girl behind Winston had begun crying out, "Swine! Swine! Swine!" And suddenly she picked up a heavy Newspeak dictionary and flung it at the screen. It struck Goldstein's nose and bounced off. The voice continued inexorably. In a lucid moment, Winston found that he was shouting with the others and kicking his heel violently against the rung of his chair. The horrible thing about the 2 minutes hate was not that one was obliged to act a part, but on the contrary, that it was impossible to avoid joining in. Within 30 seconds, any pretense was always unnecessary. A hideous ecstasy of fear and vindictiveness, a desire to kill, to torture, to smash faces in with a sledgehammer, seemed to flow through the whole group of people like an electric current, turning one, even against one's will, into a grimacing, screaming lunatic. And yet, the rage that one felt was an abstract, undirected emotion, which could be switched from one object to another like the flame of a blow lamp. Thus, at one moment, Winston's hatred was not turned against Goldstein at all, but, on the contrary, against Big Brother, the party, and the thought police. And at such moments, his heart went out to the lonely, derided heretic on the screen, sole guardian of truth and sanity in a world of lies. And yet, the very next instant, he was at one with the people about him, and all that was said of Goldstein seemed to him to be true. In those moments, his secret loathing of Big Brother changed into adoration, and Big Brother seemed to tower up, an invincible, fearless protector, standing like a rock against the hordes of Asia. And Goldstein, in spite of his isolation, his helplessness, and the doubt that hung about his very existence, seemed like some sinister enchanter capable by the mere power of his voice of wrecking the structure of civilization. It was even possible at moments to switch one's hatred this way or that way by a voluntary act. Suddenly, by the sort of violent effort with which one wrenches one's head away from the pillow in a nightmare, Winston succeeded in transferring his hatred from the face on the screen to the dark-haired girl behind him. Vivid, beautiful hallucinations flashed through his mind. He would flog her to death with a rubber truncheon. He would tie her naked to a stake and shoot her full of arrows like Saint Sebastian. He would ravish her and cut her to the throat at the moment of climax. better than before. Moreover, he realized why it was that he hated her. He hated her because she was young and pretty and sexless, because he wanted to go to bed with her and would never do so because round her sweet supple waist, which seemed to ask you to encircle it with your arm, there was only the odious scarlet sash, aggressive symbol of chastity. The hate rose to its climax. The voice of Goldstein had become an actual sheep's bleat, and for an instant the face changed into that of a sheep. Then the sheep face melted into the figure of a Eurasian soldier who seemed to be advancing, huge and terrible, his submachine gun roaring and seeming to spring out of the surface of the screen, so that some of the people in the front row actually flinched backwards in their seats. But in the same moment, drawing a deep sigh of relief from everybody, the hostile figure melted into the face of Big Brother, black-haired, black-mustached, full of power and mysterious calm, and so vast that it almost filled up the screen. Nobody heard what Big Brother was saying. It was merely a few words of encouragement, the sort of words that are uttered in the din of battle, not distinguishable individually, but restoring confidence by the fact of being spoken. Then the face of Big Brother faded away again, and instead, the three slogans of the party stood out in bold capitals. War is peace. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength. But the face of Big Brother seemed to persist for several seconds on the screen, as though the impact that it had made on everyone's eyeballs was too vivid to wear off immediately. The little sandy-haired woman flung herself forward over the back of the chair in front of her, with a tremulous murmur that sounded like, "My Savior!" She extended her arms forward to the screen, then she buried her face in her hands. It was apparent that she was uttering a prayer. At this moment, the entire group of people broke into a deep, slow, rhythmical chant of, "B, B, 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 B," over and over again, very slowly, with a long pause in between the first B and the second, a heavy, murmurous sound, somehow curiously savage in the background, of which one seems to hear the stamp of naked feet and the throbbing of tom-toms. For perhaps as much as 30 seconds they kept it up. It was a refrain that was often heard in moments of overwhelming emotion. Partly it was a sort of hymn, the wisdom and majesty of Big Brother, but still more it was an act of self-hypnosis, a deliberate drowning of consciousness by the means of rhythmic noise. Winston's entrails seemed to grow cold, and the 2 minutes' hate he could not help sharing with the general delirium, but to this subhuman chanting of B, 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 always filled him with horror. Of course he chanted with the rest. It was impossible to do otherwise. To dissemble your feelings, to control your face, to do what everyone else was doing was an instinctive reaction. But there was a space of a couple of seconds during which the expression of his eyes might conceivably have betrayed him, and it was exactly at this moment that the significant thing happened, if indeed it did happen. So, a selection from George Orwell's 1984. You can find that online, and see the background of the scene that we just played from the 1950s version. Now for a little bit of music.
Something new about Hate Week.
Oh my God, dead airspace.
How's about it? And if I don't, people will be terribly disappointed all over Germany. But this was a big hit song. Well, it wasn't really a big hit song. It was number 12. Didn't even get in the top 10. But it was number one for 6 weeks. For 6 weeks in Little Rock, Arkansas. And it's only intelligent people live in Little Rock, Arkansas. The chorus, which is what we're all going to sing and what you people at home are going to sing, too, on the couch, sitting there on the couch, is this. Dead skunk in the middle of the road. Dead skunk in the middle of the road. Dead skunk in the middle of the road. the high heaven. You know what? You have skunks here, right? Yeah? No? Think of a politician you don't like. Then. A skunk is a North American animal which emits a terrible odor when struck by an automobile or attacked by a dog. Let's hear you sing that now.
Dead skunk in the middle of the road. Dead skunk in the middle of the road. Dead skunk in the middle of the road. Stinking the high heaven. It's a country song. Crossing the highway late last night. You should've looked left and you should've looked right. Didn't see the station wagon car. Skunk got squashed and there you are. You got a dead skunk in the middle of the road. Dead skunk in the
middle of the road. Everybody louder!
Dead skunk in the middle of the road. Hanging the high.
Clapping your hands. Now! Take a whiff on me. That ain't no rose. Roll up your window and hold your nose. You don't have to look and you don't have to. Everybody sing this song with me in Germany.
The following program contains music or materials that some listeners may find offensive. WDC apologizes and urges audience discretion.
Pull it out.
remember when the House Un-American Activities Committee interrogated Daniel Boorstein. Do you remember the House Un-American Activities Committee? Probably some people here who were interrogated by the House. I don't want to point them out to you. But you may remember that it had hostile witnesses who refused to talk about their political activities and organizations or to name their friends. And then it had what were called friendly witnesses. One of those friendly witnesses was Daniel Boorstein, who, as you know, is a distinguished historian. I guess the word distinguished is a kind of neutral word. And he assured the committee that he, whatever radicalism he had ever had, he had left far behind. And I don't know if I have somewhere his little piece of his testimony before the committee. He told the committee that he had proved his opposition to communism in two ways. First, by participating in religious activities at the University of Chicago. And then he said, quote, "The second form of my opposition has been to attempt to discover and explain to students in my teaching and in my writing the unique virtues of American democracy." Well, that seems objective. The unique virtues of American democracy. Now, if he had said, "I thought I would explain to my students some of the virtues of American democracy and some of the hypocrisies of American democracy," he wouldn't have been a friendly witness at that point. I suppose that I came to history with a point of view. I came to the teaching and writing of history with a point of view already, because I didn't go directly from high school to college to graduate school to teaching, because I had a number of years between high school and college. At the age of 18, I went to work in a shipyard and worked there for 3 years. I didn't do it as a sociological experiment. Go around with a tape recorder and talk to my fellow shipyard workers. How does it feel to work in the shipyard? But I came from the kind of background, the kind of family that where the kids didn't go to college, where at the age of 18 you went to work so you could bring some money home, even if it was very little money home, to the family. So I worked in a shipyard for 3 years, and I think it's fair to say that I have a chapter in my this memoir that was referred to, which is called "You Can't Be Neutral on a Moving Train." I have a chapter in it called "Growing Up Class Conscious," and I suppose I grew up class conscious. That is, I grew up aware that most people in society worked on the kind of job I worked on. That is, not in a shipyard, maybe. It didn't matter what they worked at, but they worked at a job that they weren't crazy about, but that they had to work at. And they might be blue-collar workers, and they might be white-collar workers, or they might be steel workers, or they might be advertising copywriters, but they still were mostly working at jobs which alienated them from the process of work and alienated them from the product of their work. And so I was aware that this kind of work existed, and I was aware that there seemed to be some people in society who didn't do that kind of work. And I very early on became aware that there was no particular relationship between how hard you worked and what were the rewards that you got as a result of this work.
Reported rise in poverty
underscored the depths of the recession, as new data gave conflicting signals about what lies ahead. And at the same time, Congress labored on new ways of lifting the country out of recession. For millions of small businesses, from diners to hardware stores, a Senate vote today could bring new access to credit to get them hiring again. Senate Democrats broke through a Republican filibuster to approve $30 billion for community banks.
The motion is agreed to.
Supporters said it could be leveraged into $300 billion in loans. The bill now goes to the House, but Republicans like House Minority Leader John Boehner said the way to boost hiring is to keep the Bush-era tax cuts. They're set to expire at the end of the year.
What?
The sooner we get our arms around spending, and the sooner we extend the current tax rates for all Americans, the sooner some of the uncertainty that is clouding the picture for small businesses begins to clear up.
President Obama wants to keep the tax cuts to the middle
30 class. Days. 30 days is all it takes. 30 days of revenue starts in line.
I'm here to share with you that it can happen. In 5 short years, I turned it all around.
It was commitment. It was passion.
And 3 things you can do to change your life.
You know how my life started out.
I was an overweight man living in a one-room apartment.
I'd reached my rock bottom.
I turned it around.
I am a living testament. 65 pounds thinner. I feel great.
Juice Life's happy. Juice Life's happy.
Thank you. 3 things is all I did to change my life. 3 things.
Month of fury! 30 days! No energy! No refined sugar! That's 2 things that we talked about. Number 3. Number 3.
This drives most people crazy.
You're not gonna like it. This is easy so far.
If you can give this up for 30 days, it will. I guarantee you, change your life. You will be a new person. Are you ready? Are you ready? No orgasm.
No! Orgasm! Commit with me. Have that commitment. Have that passion. 30 days.
No orgasm. No orgasm. Don't do it.
I guarantee you, every one of you has been on this drug of orgasm since you become sexual. Nothing wrong with it. It's difficult to stop. I'm not saying it's a bad thing to come. I'm not saying that at all. It's a great thing to come, right? Am I right?
Yeah.
It's a great thing. Have you ever told your body no?
No.
Have you ever had it listen? I want commitment!
Yeah.
I want passion!
Yeah.
Yes! No orgasm for 30 days. You need to be committed. You need to be passionate. For 30 days! 30 days!
Month of fury!
I swear it will change your life.
You know the number. Give us a call. Juice it up. Juice by you.
Juice by you. Juice by you. Juice by you. Juice by you.
30 days. And what are they? Number 1.
No
red meat. No red meat. Number 2.
No concert.
And on number 3.
Three things is all I did to change my life. 3 things.
Many of you know this story, but for those of you who don't at home, I started 6 years ago.
I was an overweight man living in a one-room apartment,
but I had a job. I had a good job. I worked 55, 60 hours a week. That's 6 shifts, 13 hours a day. I worked that hard and that long for Jerry's Supermarket.
I fronted the milk. You know what that is? Fronting the milk. That's when someone reaches in and takes the milk out. I was the guy who reached in after them and fronted the milk right to the front of the rack.
Someone takes their gallon of milk, you front the milk. Now, Jerry's Supermarket was a wonderful place to work. Now, for a man who's 65 pounds overweight, that's a pretty good job, right? You're around food all the time. I was a man who was sick, and I was a man who needed food. I was a man who needed red meat. I was a man who needed sugar. I was a man who needed food at all times. I was depressed.
I mean, I was down and out. I was a man who was 65 pounds overweight. I did this action.
Thank you.
psychiatrist, who's now a Scientologist.
And dangerous, and has been spotted in the west side area armed with a meat cleaver in one hand and his genitals in the other. We urge all residents to stay inside and lock your doors until the suspect has been apprehended. We now return you to your normal programming for your listening pleasure.
That was a band called Think, a local band. That's actually an old recording I think they made when they were still in high school. I suppose now they're really freshmen at VCU, but they do play locally, and the band's name is Think, and the rest of the album is just as good as that. We'll be closing out with a few relaxing numbers. You've been listening to DJ Strider's Strange Cucumber Show on WDCE 90.1 FM, University of Richmond Radio, and streaming online, WDCE.org.
I got to thinking about His Majesty the Policeman, see? I figured that must be the draggiest job in the world. Think what a drag it is going out on a good day. You're feeling real good. You're riding along. Your squad car's all polished up. You know what I mean?
I gave you 10 tonic.
And you're feeling real mellow. Along comes some poor stud with a load of red kids like a flower pots all over the place. Going a little too fast, you know what I mean? You got to stop the cat. You got to bring him down and lay one on him. It's a pretty tough job, and then when you walk up to you, you don't know whether they're going to pull out a French 75 or what the hell is it? It's a drag, so I wrote a little thing called His Majesty the Policeman. He's a children friend at every bend, the policeman. And you can bet your life he's hip to Mac the knife. That's His Majesty the Policeman. You should never trip a policeman. Or try to hip or even tip a policeman. Get a ticket to the ball and you can't fight City Hall. That's the Majesty, the policeman. Say, remember the nobility. They're here, they're everywhere. It's mobility. You can look near and far, but they'll pin you by radar. That's the Majesty, the policeman. Here they come, the man in blue. Hop of the up the sergeant's there, ribbity-bip the patrolman too. Hop-a-da-bop, the chief looks great. Hop-a-da-bop, the captain straight. Ribbity-bip, hip-hip-hooray. The Rio crew. Hop-a-da-bop-a-da-bop. You always try to swing with a policeman. And never ring-a-ding a policeman. And if you're really hip, you'll never make a slip against their majesties, the policeman.